on KBOO is Between the Lines, and Old Mole will be back next week as usual. Thanks again for all those who pledged this morning to support KBOO. We will we'll see you again, and we thank you so much.
Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's your community radio, which means that making sure it's properly funded to remain strong, fierce, and independent is your responsibility. You can discharge that duty right now at 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm/give. Coming up, since it's now 10:01 a.m., is Between the Lines. So stay tuned.
Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world.
The United Nations is in the midst of raising $4 billion from donor nations to prevent a full-scale famine that would impact over 20 million people in Somalia, South Sudan, Yemen, and northeast Nigeria. This would be the third major famine to hit Somalia since the early 1990s, sparked by ongoing conflict. Today, Somalia has a stronger government than during the last famine 6 years ago, when the Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab controlled much of the country. Still, aid workers are at risk of being kidnapped by insurgents. As the international community gathered in London to mobilize resources for Somalia, aid workers warned pending U.S. military action could exacerbate the famine, making things worse for the 6 million people dependent on food aid. After over 30 years of civil war and rule by warlords and militias, 2 million Somalis have fled the East African nation. Now, large Somali communities are located across the globe in cities such as Minneapolis, London, and Johannesburg. Last year, Somalis in exile raised over $1.4 billion in aid for the people of the country they left behind, funds totaling nearly 25% of Somalia's economy. Single-payer healthcare advocates introduced the Healthy California Act in the California legislature in February, a one-page bill to establish a comprehensive single-payer health insurance system to cover every resident in the state. The legislation would effectively banish private health insurance companies in the state, which have blocked earlier attempts to move to single-payer health care. Financing for the new system remains vague, and the politics of making single-payer in California a reality is uncertain. The American Prospect reports that the debate over single-payer in California comes as Republicans in Congress are moving to repeal and replace Obamacare and seeking to roll back Medicaid coverage for the poor. It also comes at a time when the United States is the only industrialized nation in the world without some form of universal health coverage for its citizens. Across developed economies, health coverage is delivered in multiple ways. England and Spain have national health services which provide direct health care. In Canada, the government offers insurance to pay private sector health providers. The U.S. has Medicare, a model single-payer program that currently provides health insurance for citizens over 65, as well as Medicare Part B that incorporates private insurers in the system. Hundreds of workers were evacuated from the Hanford Nuclear Reservation in early May after the collapse of a tunnel where toxic nuclear waste was stored. The collapse occurred at a site where rail cars that had carried contaminated nuclear fuel rods were buried, dating from the 1960s. The U.S. Department of Energy stated that no radiation was released, but the event raised new concern about the ongoing risk of cleaning up the U.S. nuclear weapons complex. The Hanford Reservation was built as part of the Manhattan Project that designed the world's first atomic bomb toward the end of World War II. The site is 150 miles southeast of Seattle and abuts the Columbia River. The most dangerous contaminant in Hanford is 56 million gallons of radioactive liquid waste stored in 177 underground tanks, some of which have leaked. Washington State Attorney General Bob Ferguson filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Department of Energy and its prime contractor at Hanford for allowing toxic vapors to be released from underground storage tanks, harming workers' health and safety. Over the years, these vapors have caused multiple illnesses. A massive cleanup of Hanford that began in the late 1980s costs $2 billion a year. The work is expected to take until 2060 and cost more than $100 billion. This week's news summary was compiled by Bob Nixon. For Between the Lines, I'm Elaine Osowski.
On April 27th, 14 of the 21 youth plaintiffs in a historic lawsuit against the U.S. government held a press conference in front of the Supreme Court building in Washington, D.C. Their case, filed by Our Children's Trust, aims to hold the federal government accountable for the failure to protect their right to a stable climate. A federal district judge in Oregon last April denied a motion to dismiss the lawsuit that was brought by the federal government and the fossil fuel industry, which had joined the Obama administration to oppose the youth plaintiffs' filing. That judge's opinion was confirmed by a second judge in November, setting the case on its way to be adjudicated. At the press event, the young plaintiffs announced that the name of the lead defendant in their suit has now been changed from Barack Obama to Donald Trump. Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus was at the event, just 2 days before the People's Climate March in the Capitol, and spoke with 21-year-old Kelsey Juliana, a young woman from Oregon who's the lead plaintiff in the case. Here she explains the evolution of the lawsuit and what the young people who are involved, ages 9 to 21, hope to accomplish.
There are cases across the globe pushing for climate litigation. This in particular case is filed out of the Eugene Federal District Courthouse. It is a federal case. Now, there's also a case that I'm myself is on against the government of Oregon, and that was filed way back in 2011. So there are, actually in 2011, our Children's Trust helped launch a whole fleet of lawsuits. And so they helped inspire and connect young people in their states with local attorneys. And a lot of those cases got dismissed right off the bat. There are still about five or six cases that are state cases that are still in the courts, supported by Our Children's Trust. But all of those cases are very different. They're at different levels of courts. They're different plaintiffs. So it is I would say it's a joint climate litigation movement. You know, there's cases in India. There's cases in Pakistan, Turkey, you know, all over.
So this was filed against the Obama administration, who, to his great shame, intervened against your side, right, and in support of the fossil fuel industry, which is really outrageous.
We filed this case against the Obama administration. The fossil fuel industry petitioned the courts to intervene. They became intervener defenders. We did not originally sue them. They petitioned to be on this case because they saw that if we won, our case would impact their business and their industry, and so therefore they wanted to have a stake in the trial and hearings.
I guess what I meant to say was Obama and the fossil fuel industry were on the same side.
Yes, they are, and the administration is still on the same side. They quite literally sit at the same table together.
So is there anything different because we have a new president? Did you have to refile, or are you taking advantage of the climate march coming up to get a bigger megaphone for your already filed case?
Yes. What we're doing with this climate march and with Trump as the new administration is that we're just amplifying the necessity of this case and the urgency of this case, and we're rallying people to join our movement as kind of the last chance for climate. So we did not have to refile. All we do is we just rename the lead defendant. The lead defendant is now Trump, and all of the heads of the agencies that we filed are also, you know, those are updated to fit the new administration.
And do you have an actual date?
We do not. It's the end of this year, and you know the defendants are going to try and push that and delay further. But we are pretty adamant. You know, no, we will have our case heard by the end of this year.
But that isn't up to you, though, totally, right?
That's up to the courts, and we are confident that we will meet that target date. It's in the 9th District, so we're going to hear that case in Oregon, in Eugene.
As part of the press conference, the 14 young plaintiffs who were present read excerpts from federal Judge Ann Aiken's ruling last fall, introduced by lead plaintiff Kelsey Giuliana.
We're here today to tell you what the judiciary has to say about our rights, our future, the role of federal courts, from this court on down. On November 10th of last year, Judge Ann Aiken denied the attempts of the U.S. government and the fossil fuel industry to dismiss our case. We're honored to stand here on these steps and read to you some of our favorite passages from this landmark decision.
This is no ordinary lawsuit. Yeah.
This lawsuit is not about proving that climate change is happening or that human activity is driving it.
This action is of a different order than the typical environmental case. It alleges the defendant's actions and inactions, whether or not they violate any specific statutory duty, have so profoundly damaged our home planet that they threaten plaintiffs' fundamental constitutional rights to life and liberty.
At its heart, this lawsuit asks this court to determine whether defendants have violated plaintiffs' constitutional rights.
The Declaration of Independence and the Constitution did not create the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The documents are instead vehicles for protecting and promoting those already existing rights.
Yeah. And the Founding Fathers were influenced by intergenerational considerations.
They believed the inalienable rights to life, liberty, and property were rooted in a philosophy of intergenerational equity.
The genius of the Constitution is that it allows future generations to protect the rights of all persons to enjoy liberty as we learn its meaning.
Plaintiffs do not seek to have this court direct any individual agency to issue or enforce any particular regulation.
Rather, they ask the court to declare the United States' current environmental policy infringes their fundamental rights and direct the agencies to implement an enforceable national plan to stabilize the climate system.
Even when a case implicates hotly contested political issues, the judiciary must not shrink from its role as a co-equal branch of government.
Federal courts retain broad authority to fashion practical remedies when confronted with complex and intractable constitutional violations.
Just as marriage is the foundation of the family, a stable climate system is quite literally the foundation of society, without which there would be neither civilization nor progress.
Exercising my reasoned judgment, I have no doubt that the right to a climate system capable of sustaining human life is fundamental to a free and ordered society.
That was Kelsey Giuliana, lead plaintiff in a lawsuit to force the federal government to address climate change, followed by 14 of the 21 plaintiffs reading from Judge Ann Aiken's court decision in their favor. For more information on our Children's Trust climate change lawsuit, visit our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
Well, thank you very much. We're listening to Flashpoints presented by Dennis Bernstein, and we get that show. We're not? I guess we're not. I was just corrected by the engineer. Bugger that one up. Anyway, I'm sitting here with Ken, and I'm sure of that. And the phone number is 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. It's so important you pledge your support for this wonderful community resource. That's KBOO. You can also donate online at kboo.fm, or you can come down here to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. We're just off Burnside. Very easy to find. I recommend coming in, meeting one of our wonderful receptionists, maybe having a cup of coffee. and even getting a tour of the station. There's a lot of opportunities at KBOO, and if you don't have time for that, then please pick up the phone, dial 877-500-5266. I know you have time for that, and it will be so simple, so easy. We have some lovely volunteers sitting by the phones waiting to answer them. They're already ringing, but we want you to grab the phone and make them ring even more.
In fact, we have two thank yous, Will. We have Victoria. Victoria is a new member in Northeast Portland. Thank you, Victoria. And we have Fran, who, great idea. She actually called up and she got a gift membership for a friend. And that's something you can do by calling 877-500-5266. As Will mentioned, we have volunteers at the phones. I usually am one of those people who would just like to go online, which you can do at kboo.fm and click on the donate. But I have also, Will, answered the phones here during the membership drives. And actually, it's a great pleasure for the volunteers, people like me and the folks at the phones right now, to talk to you, the listener, and find out what you enjoy about KBOO, what we're doing right, if you have any ideas about suggestions of how we can improve. We're happy to do that. You know, next year, Will, is the 50th anniversary of this station, which just boggles the mind.
Wowzers. 50 years of KBOO, huh?
And the reason is listeners like you guys at home right now or on the road or at work, give us a call. If you're not currently a member, you can become a new member or renew your membership at 877-500-5266. Help us celebrate that big 50th next year.
That's a huge landmark. 50 years of KBOO. And it's happening thanks to you, the listeners, and the people who pledged their support for this terrific radio station. Please call us at 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO.
Thank you, Will and Ken. And there's one more member of our community who has gotten involved in a way that made sense for them. So let's hear about that before we go over to Barbara Bernstein and Locus Focus.
KBOO Community.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987.